All right, so my name is Peter Klopczyk. I'm here with my interview subject, Max, for my History 485 History in the Wild final project. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. How have you been, Peter?
Real good, real good.
Great.
Thanks for doing this interview with me. I know that you...
No problem. It's a pleasure, and we're good.
Absolutely, man. Glad to hear. So our first question here is that pretty much one that everyone can relate to. You're working from home right now. What's that like?
It's a very drastic change. In 2019, I flew over 300,000 miles around the world. And start of 2020, I have not flown 1 mile all year. So you want to talk about a total difference. That's like the difference between, you know, driving a car and then crawling on your hands and knees if you had to go somewhere. It's totally different. Everything is online. Everything is meetings and calendars and whose calendar meeting what. It's a logistical nightmare, but I've been in the high-tech electronics industry in sales and marketing for almost 40 years. And the best way, matter of fact, the only proper way to get a deal when you're doing things internationally is to sit face-to-face across somebody. There's enough communication problems with just language barriers, dialects, all this kind of stuff. You look in the person's eye, you can tell the yes or no. You can tell the agree or disagree. You can tell the concerns. You can't do that. Even if you're on a video call, you can't do it.
Yeah, that's the thing. You're working with the Chinese a lot. What's that like, especially with people saying that, like, the coronavirus is the quote-unquote China virus?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I don't want to overstep my bounds, get too much of my personal opinions on things. I'd like to be... Let's just say, I just like to be straightforward, but open-minded. The Chinese are a different nationality and a different culture with or without coronavirus. The coronavirus just added to the tension and the pressure. Now, I've got some very, very good people that I had hired to represent us over there. And I got a very close relationship with them. We talk family. We talk about... we even talk politics. We talk things like that. It's a little bit more tense because I think they're under pressure to say things didn't happen, and they know what's being said over here in the United States. But I trust them, and they are honest with me that what went on in Wuhan, they said it's totally wrong what happened and how it happened and what's going on. But so much has been done, and they do talk to me about we're back to normal again, and I tend not to believe them.
Is that because they're party members?
Wait a minute. You're an American. They're a Chinese. You're under this government. They're under theirs. You have a nationality and a patriotism, quote unquote, and they have it.
Okay.
So you have to accept it. You don't have to agree with it, but you accept it because... I'm not there to judge them as their political parties. I'm there to write business. They're there to create business. And we try to keep it focused on that. But the phone calls, I mean, the time zone differences and the phone calls and the length of calls and the translations that need to be done, it is, tell you what, it can give you a headache. You know, 2 hours on the phone with China, listening to people translate things back and forth. I'll tell you what, if you don't fall asleep, your eyes blur.
And you have to do this at like 1 a.m? Because of the time difference?
Actually, what really happens, they're 14 hours difference from us. So basically, I'm doing it the day before. See, so if at 10 o'clock in the morning their time is 8 o'clock at night the day before my time.
Okay.
Okay? So we usually do our calls anywhere between 8 and 9 at night. Okay? It's a little harder in Europe. Europe's a little different because Europe is basically behind us at 6, 7 hours something. And so what you can do with them is an early morning, 7 a.m. our time is like 3 p.m. their time. So you can catch them in their afternoon after a full day. And it's when you start your, when I start my day anyway, between 5, 6, 7 a.m. anyway.
Yeah.
So it's a little easier with the Chinese. But I also work close with the Taiwanese and Hong Kong. And the interesting thing there is that, you know, there's a real political rift between those two countries. And I try to make sure I never step into that hole, because I think it's real tense there. So
yeah.
That's another thing that goes on. So I work with the Taiwanese, I work with the Chinese, Japanese, Koreans, Hong Kong. I talk with the people down in the ASEAN area, which is the Philippines, Malaysia, India.
Is that your base of manufacturing there? Or is it more China?
Our base of manufacturing, the key manufacturing is here in the States. Okay? Components that we get, though, are from all over the world. Materials that we get that we use to build our product. But once we get our design and everything of our materials, we bring that to the States. And then we do our processing. One of our subcontractors is in Wisconsin. And then it moves over to a subcontractor we now have set up in Minnesota. And then we finish up our product with the lighting system that we put onto it in Ohio.
Very nice.
Yeah.
That's good. You're creating American jobs.
It's nice. Yeah, we create American jobs, do that. Unfortunately, some of the materials that we're getting, we've had a hard time getting them because we sourced them over in Asia.
And is that because of tariffs, coronavirus, or both?
Oh, both those things. Both those.
Okay.
I'm not going to discredit who is trying to build the material in China. But when you have failure after failure of the material coming out, I mean, we jump on an airplane with two engineers, our CTO, myself, maybe even our CEO. We go over there and we raise hell.
Yeah.
We can't travel.
Oh.
So you're trying to solve problems of a highly technical basis. Where? Again, video calls late at night, all this kind of stuff. It doesn't translate. It doesn't translate.
Okay.
It's so difficult.
And is that where your Chinese representatives come in?
Well, recently what we did, our representative is not technical. I didn't hire technical representatives. I hired people to go out, find business to sell. Okay?
Okay.
But what we have contacts, and we have recently employed on a part-time basis 4 very technical people in the film industry. Film, not picture film. Films as far as like layers of polycarbonates and stuff like that. And they are now sitting at this manufacturer when they're doing their production runs and examining what they're doing. And we know the person that owns that company and we know the people. So what we do is we have somebody on site that we have a little more, not influence, but need to communicate with and better communication. So we can understand better and they can translate it better, we feel. So hopefully by the end of this year, we're going to have this situation turned away. But it's been going on for 12 months.
Oh, absolutely.
It's been terrible.
Absolutely. I mean, it's only come to the United States in, what, the past 7 or 8?
Yeah, I would say.
Okay. How has that affected your life at home as far as that goes? Like, what about your interpersonal relationships with people this year?
Oh.
How's that changed for you? It's changed for a lot of people, but I'm definitely concerned with how it's changed for you because you got a very, like, social attitude about you.
Yeah, that's one thing that hurts. I've had to try to find different outlets, just personally, as everybody needs. But I've been traveling internationally, like I said, for almost 40 years. And so my family's used to me being gone and then home and gone and home. Now with me home and home and home and home and home, I think I drive them crazy. 'Cause I'm always around. And, you know, everybody's had to change. Plus everyone's alert and aware that, you know, the COVID thing and how do you take care of yourselves. And I've got 3 older sons and they're phenomenal. My wife's a teacher. You know, we got a couple of great dogs, one very young, one very old. So we have a lot of outlets. The outlets I was trying to get more and trying to improve my health to get out a little more exercise, bike riding, walking, getting into things like that. I was involved pretty deeply in the community for the soccer community for like 25 years. I was a volunteer doing everything every Saturday. Well, okay, soccer shut down.
Yeah.
You can't play youth soccer. So, you know, that hurt everybody, but it gave me an outlet that I had to go try to replace with something. And, you know, hey, sometimes I found myself just getting very lazy and just sitting for a couple of days.
I got
that,
you.
Yeah, but I tell you what, that plays on your mind along with your body. So, you know, it's hard. My family's been absolutely terrific about it all the way through, and everyone supports everybody. I have one son, you know, that is in college and will be finishing up shortly. Two sons that graduated, they're doctors and they're working in the city. They got furloughed off, so they were living at home without a job. You know, so it's been
that
a lot.
Must have been fun for you.
Well, the thing of it is a lot of changes, and nobody asked for these changes. These were forced upon us, you know. And you go, okay, what do we do? All right, A, support one another, get together, figure out what's going on, and then try to make everybody stay calm and say, look, nothing lasts forever. Stay positive. Think what's happening. We'll make the moves we need to make to make. But you're not in it alone. Make sure everybody knows they're not in it alone. You know, we're all together.
And I mean, there must have been a silver lining from this. Like, you got to have all your kids at home for the first time in a while, huh?
That's true. That's true. Of course, the grocery bill went up about 35%. That was one thing. and the decibel levels of voices in the house also went up about 30%. But, hey, I had somebody to sit there and we could watch some football and bet back and forth a little bit, having some fun and guessing things with one of my sons. The other son loves cars a lot. The other one's terrific with music, you know, and, you know, I'd love to listen to them practice and listen to the music they're doing. And then they're all very, not political, and one's much more on the social media than the other, but they exchange things. And when they start exchanging and laughing, I mean, I just sit back and let it go because it is... I don't understand their humor. I don't understand their subjects, but that doesn't matter. They're having fun. We're all together at home.
How much do they say, okay, boomer, to you?
No, they usually just look at me and shake their heads because they know, you know, I'm the crotchety old guy from the 70s. I'll come up with something and give them a comment, and they'll look at me like, where the hell did that come from? Oh, yeah, that's one of the old man jokes.
Well, that's the thing. You bring up the 70s. You lived through a lot of stuff.
I was born. I was really raised in the
60s. You almost got drafted, didn't
really
you?
I was really raised in the 60s. I graduated in the early 70s.
Yeah, so you were almost drafted to Vietnam. What was that whole thing like?
I was 1A. So they had what was called the Selective Service was put in place. And what they would do is they would pull out, you know, one, and they pull out a date off the calendar. Two, another date. They do 365 pulls of a button. So what happens, everybody with that birth date, if they wanted the first, we're going to take the first 100 pulled. Well, 100 birth dates, everybody there, bango, you're on your way.
Mm-hmm.
I was number 12.
Oh, geez.
I was going to go. But they stopped pulling from that in 1972, and I graduated in 73. Now, my second oldest brother was in, he was in the Army for 3 years. He was Germany, Ethiopia, I forget the other place in that. And then he was sent to Nam, and he was a surveyor.
Yeah.
He was land surveyor, not artillery survey. So he wasn't in there aiming guns. He was there after they had aimed the guns, blew everybody up and stuff. Then they'd come in and try to build a base, build an air
he would plot that?
Basically plot it and then guide the guys that were sitting there creating all that kind of stuff. He said, you just had to watch out for the sniper fire. These, you know, guys would be up in the trees taking pot shots at the guys driving the tanks. You know, you get one shot comes off, another shot. Third shot comes off and there'd be a call by the captain all of a sudden pretty soon everybody have to just head on over, bury themselves in their bunkers, and you know the guys that come over with the F-4s at the napalm and just torch the trees.
Jeez.
He said it was just boom. But he did not. God was with him that he never got hit. But that was an experience for him, and I think he carried it with him quite a while.
I got you.
Now they call it PSTD. Back then they just called it being a war vet.
Okay. And then, how do you see the difference between the way Vietnam veterans were treated and the way, like, veterans of what now is, like, past wars, like Iraq, Afghanistan, it's getting to that point, too?
Well, it's huge. It was huge. Now, I was still quite young when he came back.
Yeah.
So I really wasn't, and now, hey, I'm a young kid in the just end of the 60s, okay? What are you doing? You're in high school, right?
Yeah.
So you're looking for girls. You're looking, trying to get beer underage. You're trying to get grades.
I've heard your stories about that.
Go to, and hopefully you can try to find some money to buy a car. You know, you weren't really cared that much about the political animosity going on.
Yeah. Okay?
But I do know that a number of my brother's friends and my brother himself and that were, they were looked down upon, you know, when they came back from the war. And now that I'm older and I've seen a lot with the wars and I'm a lot more politically sensitive about things like that, I see the very positive aspects of these people are going to a different land to, now, without getting political, are they there for the right reasons or not? Okay, I don't even get into that.
You can talk about that for hours.
Yes, but they're there fighting for the purpose of the United States, and we need to respect that to the highest level. And I'm glad that that has changed. But I think what really changed it was when people saw how damaging it was when, you know, the hippies and the crazies and the gooks and everything like that were, you know, spitting on people coming back from Vietnam who were injured.
Yeah.
You know, and now that I look back, and there's a lot of movies been made about it, mm-hmm. things like that that you can see. There's a fair amount of accuracy in it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what, like, the world notwithstanding, as far as, like, your political outlook, do you mind if we get into that little bit?
Yeah.
All right. Big question. How do you feel about lockdowns and masks and business closures and stuff like that? How do you feel about it overall? You can talk as long as you want about this.
I am 99.9% against it.
Okay. I got you. Tell me why.
Because what they're doing, they're picking and choosing winners and losers, and the government should never do that. Mm-hmm. Not of their own people in a free society, especially in a free capitalist society. Is there danger in the COVID flu, okay, why they're trying to lock things down? Yes, of course there is. Is it a flu they don't know about? Yes. How many different diseases or illnesses and that have come up in the past 20 years that we knew nothing about? Probably 10. Did we shut everything down? No, why not? Because people took the personal responsibility of what they needed to do. So what this became is just an overreach. And as soon as you give them an inch, they're going to take a mile. And I'm conservative. I would say if you threw a Democrat, a Republican up against me, up toward me and said, who are you going to vote for? I'd say Republican. But I feel that I'm one to sit there and read what they stand for, what they're going to do. But there is such a huge division between them, that's almost an easy statement today of who is going to have a more conservative view and a more capitalistic view.
Yeah.
Of what needs to happen. Personal responsibility need to be respected. If people are going to get it, they're going to get it. If they're not, they're not. When they talk about the deaths from this, okay, one of these days you're going to get the true facts. I don't think our news media has any concept of journalism and factual attitudes. All they're looking for is a story and a gotcha and who can be first. So damn the truth. Let's just make sure that we have our face on the front of the page. And I said that, and that is an extreme disservice to the entire American public. I know people that have no idea about, well, you know, the Russian thing with Trump or something like that. They don't even know what it's about. They have no idea. Why? Because they've been buried underneath a rock, just looking at the same people who keep saying, you know, orange man bad, orange man bad, orange man bad. They have no idea what the truth is.
Absolutely. Do you see news nowadays more as one of these two things? Do you see it as either fake news or propaganda or both?
Both.
Okay.
Both.
Why do you say that?
Well, if it's not the truth, it's fake, right?
Yeah.
It's light switch on, light switch off. Mm-hmm. If somebody's going to take a fake or false story and promote it, okay, That's propaganda.
Yeah.
So that's why I say both. Okay? Now, there's degrees of everything. All right? Unfortunately, I think a lot of it's got to a degree to where nobody wants any involvement. I've tried to cut back a whole lot of what I watch and what I listen to in news right now.
Yeah.
Because it can... Well, it can taint your mind both ways.
Okay. Right? What do you mean both ways?
Well, let's say you're listening to conservative, you're listening to liberal. Let's just use those two sides, all right? The conservatives can go off... they can go off the cliff, too, you know? And so can the liberals. So it depends how much you want to listen to. What the key thing is you have to do is to say, all right, I hear this happening. I'm doubting it. Where's your facts? I hear this happening. Give me your facts. Take the facts and make your own decision. That's what they're not letting happen. That's why people say, oh, it's fake news. Why? Because they're just telling you what they want to say and saying it's true, even if it's not. You as a person have to make that, be interested enough and buying enough to make that own decision yourself. And they're not giving you the facts to say, okay, decide, do you like it or not?
Yeah, absolutely.
The international marketplace, first off, you take like Obama and the Biden administration. The international world of politics and activities, stuff like that, had no fear of the United States defending or protecting itself. They felt that, oh, what a nice guy, what a nice this and nice that. Yeah, nice guys don't run countries. Not dictator countries, okay?
Yeah.
You can't be a nice guy.
So Trump, you're saying the United States is a dictatorship, or am I misconstruing?
No, you're misconstruing. It's like dictators sit there and say, fine, we can do anything we want, because the United States isn't going to stop us.
Oh.
It's a nice guy. We'll sit there, well. Yeah, no guts. No guts, no glory. However, you take like Trump, and the Trump administration has gone in and put the hammer down. Not only on adversaries like China, Russia, Iran, these kind of things, but also, hey, he went into NATO and he said, hey, look at the NATO contract. You're to take 2% of your GDP and you're supposed to pay it into the protection that we give you.
Yeah.
Where is it? I can name five countries right now, haven't paid anything for the past 10 years. Pay up. So it wasn't just adversaries. People that were our allies in that, he said, pay up. Because people have been just taking advantage. He said, enough's enough. We will help. We will this. We will that. We'll all benefit from it. But we all have to pay into it. Let's get it done.
Yeah.
That's just one small issue, you know? You got the border wall. You got the Iranian thing and getting rid of some of the people that were killing all these people. And you've got China and the tariffs, which strongly affected me. China,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
It seems that you like a strongman approach in government. So with that being said, how do you...
A strongman approach to law and order.
Okay, okay.
Yep.
That actually leads perfectly into what I was going to ask you.
I don't like somebody who makes his own rules. I like people that are strong to enforce the rules that are in place.
Yeah.
If you don't like the rules that are in place, get your representatives to change them.
Now I'm curious what you think about police brutality and George Floyd and all that.
I think if a policeman is a servant to us, okay? And a policeman does the best job that he can. If he crosses the line legally, he should be absolutely found guilty or tried and found guilty for what he did wrong. Just like me, just like you, just like anybody.
Right? Yeah.
I think taking something like a George Floyd thing, though, and then taking that as, oh, so now we have the ability to go burn down anybody's business. Well, those people are infringing upon the rights of those that never did anything wrong, had the right for their business, has the freedom of their business, and they should go to jail. Now, you're saying locking everybody up. No, they should be punished for doing that. And unfortunately, there isn't enough guts to punish the people that are doing what's wrong. Why? Oh, it might cost me votes. You shouldn't be in office if you're worried about votes. If you go to office, you're not going to office to get voted again. You're going to office to serve the people that put you in office. I'm going to call it a fine line. It's a definite need. And unfortunately, many, many people. And here's when you start looking between Democrats and Republicans.
Yeah.
Okay, look at the states that had the problems. They're weak. And I don't like that.
Okay.
I don't like that.
Yeah. Do you support more of a human-centered approach to justice or more of a government-centered approach to justice? Because there's been a lot of people that are saying, like, for example, Ron DeSantis, he was like, I'm going to pass this bill that says you're legally allowed to kill looters. What do you think about that kind of thing? Who do you think has more of a right to defend against riots like we saw this summer?
Wow. Wow. I believe you have to have an organized authority. Because an organized authority is acting under rules of engagement, let's call it.
Yeah.
Which are the laws. If I go out and say, oh, that person is stealing something off there, and pull out a handgun and shoot them, and they took a piece of bubble gum off the shelf, because that's wrong. And you could walk in and say, it's a piece of bubble gum, who cares? So what you don't have is a continuity.
Okay.
That's why so oftentimes, you know, the anarchists or the groundswell of people that sit there and say, okay, well, we're going to force this issue and that. You've got to have some sort of semblance of law and order so that you have a framework to work from. Changing that framework takes time, and it's going to disappoint some people. Nobody's going to believe 100% that everything is right. But when you look at the United States as a whole, all right, where else do you have the freedom, protected freedom, opportunity freedoms? Where else in the world? There's nowhere in the world that has what we have. And we have it because there's a rule of law that protects you to do what you need to do. And if someone says we're going to take the law into our own hands, that's chaos. And you can see that all over the Venezuelas and the Iraqs and, you know, how many other crazy places around there right now.
Yeah. How do your opinions stack up to other people you spend a lot of time with?
Well, I worked for a company. I joined a company 3 years ago, and the oldest person in the company is me.
Okay.
The second oldest person in the company is 40 years old.
All right, so you're a little out of your element there.
I'm 25 years older than anybody in the company or more.
Yeah.
So they know that I'm a conservative person, and they know that I believe in certain things. But I listen. It's business.
Yeah.
And it's not my family, so it's not the first thing on my list. But getting along with them is so vital, because if I go off on my own, I'm one person. If I join in and go with others, so my job is less antagonism and it's more leadership.
Okay.
Because a lot of these people, and I'm not playing games here at all in saying this, but they need leadership on a business basis. They've never been out and done what I've done. I need to show them that they can be successful, and here's the way to do it, but this is the way not to do it. And don't poke them in the eye with it. Show them how it works so they trust me. And that trust creates the leadership that I can tell. So then I become a confidant with them. They're doing something and they say, what do you think of this? That's a great idea. Don't do it this way, though.
Yeah.
Or that's a great idea. Keep that going, because this is where it's going to end up. Because I've seen it 100 times before and they haven't.
Okay.
So it has to be more of a, again, I take it as a responsibility.
All right.
To lead them. Is it frustrating sometimes? Oh, hell yes.
Yeah.
You know, we're in it together. You know, the company's got to last, so we work it together.
Oh, I totally understand. What about your family? How do they stack up against you? Not necessarily against you, but with you.
I think we all have the same basic beliefs.
Okay.
The law and order beliefs and stuff. How to approach it, how to transact it. You know, everyone has their own opinions, which is important.
Yeah.
You got to listen to others' opinions in that. And we have some good knockdowns, knockdown dragouts and arguments in that, which is good, because expressing yourself, you can never really measure your thought unless you express it to somebody and they agree or disagree. All right?
Yeah.
And by doing that, you either... You have... What it does to you, if you're going to be honest, is it makes you step back and say, okay, what am I thinking that's wrong? That person disagrees with me so hard. And we do that as a family. Okay? We'll disagree with one of my sons when he... You know, he'll have a more liberal approach. And then we'll have all of a sudden like an I don't care approach. Oh, you got to care. This is going to affect you. Or another one will sit there and say, hey, did you see this? We go, well, isn't that kind of a conspiracy theory? No, it's got this and this and that. Well, show me the facts. Mm-hmm. So you challenge them. And what I appreciate is when they come back and they challenge me, because I can get just drilled back down into my old 60s, 70s heritage and just the hell with the hippies, you know? And, yeah. And that's not good for me, because I can't grow. Even though I'm old, I still have to grow. Every day you got to grow.
Yeah, I'm guessing that's one of your number one goals in life is personal growth, continually.
Well, every day, yeah, yeah. As soon as you stop growing in life and your personal goals and you stop growing in life, life's over.
Okay. I mean,
every day is something new. Look at what changes every day.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean,
and it's going to challenge you for a question. It's going to challenge you for an answer. It's going to challenge you for a reaction. It's going to challenge you for something you're going to do. And you have to make a decision. Well, just to flip a coin every time or say, I don't care.
Yeah.
You fall behind. You have to kind of stay up with it. You can choose your subjects, but you got to stay up with it.
Well, I mean, you've seen how much things have changed even since you started in business. Like, you told me you used to own a brick phone, didn't you?
I sure did.
Yeah.
I sure did. Hey, I had the first computer that I had was a Casio with a 64 by 240 big blocky matrix sandwich. It was just, it was slower. It was slower than molasses.
Yeah.
All right. But here's a good one. Here's a good one for you. Everybody knows compact computer. And when they started, they had a suitcase. It stood about 12 inches high. It came at a slight angle, and it was about 8 inches wide. Okay?
Okay.
And you carried it like a suitcase. And what you would do is you would take the top cover would snap off, but kind of like a musical instrument, okay?
Okay.
When you know how to take music things, you have like an amplifier.
Yeah.
Okay, you take the front off, and that's your controls.
Okay.
The front would pop down, and that was your keyboard, and you had a 9-inch CRT monitor there.
So this was the first laptop, is what you're telling
this
me.
This first portable computer.
Okay. Compact, is there a difference?
Compact. Yeah, absolutely. Portable computer, compact computer. I brought to them the first flat panel LCD screen that was a VGA screen, and showed it to them that they could build a laptop computer.
Okay.
I brought them the first LCD made by Hitachi. I was working for Hitachi at the time. And I went into the meeting, and I had the thing running. And people, we had a conference room, and there must have been 50 people in this conference room. They couldn't believe it.
Okay.
They couldn't believe the thing. All of a sudden, everybody moved back to the wall. And a guy came walking in, came walking around to the table, and he said, hi. And I said, how do you do? Tell me about this.
Don't worry, I'll redact your name.
Yeah, is that that? And he said, so how you doing? And I said, good, good. Tell me about this. So I told him everything about it. And he goes, oh, we could use that, guys. And he looked around everyone. He says, we can use that. And he walked out of the room. And the guy that had brought me there, the rep brought me there. He says, do you know who that was? And I said, no, I have no idea. He said, Rod Canyon. He was the founder of Compaq.
Oh, geez.
And I sat there for 20 minutes talking with him about technology. I had no idea who he was. Of course, I'd been with Hitachi 3 months.
Okay.
But that's what you do. You just go and you keep on things moving. And ever since then, I've been interested not only in high tech, but advanced products. What do you do next? What's coming up down the line? What's the next marketplace? What's not a hot thing in consumer. It's what's leading to new technologies that are going to allow things to advance farther.
What do you think the world's going to look like in 2030 based on what you're seeing now and doing business with now?
Oh, Christ. 10 years from now?
Yeah. I mean, there are people saying we're going to colonize Mars by 2025. What do you think it's going to look like in 10 years? Because you're the best person I know to even ask this.
You know what? And you know, There are some days that I have no idea. Mm-hmm. I mean, you work on a day to day, and you don't know who's going to come up with that next new idea. Who's the next Elon Musk? If you go back in the day, you know, who was the next Tesla? Mm-hmm. You know, who's the next? You start talking people like Bill Gates, you know, or Jobs, and who's the next guy that's going to grab it and take it to the next level because the technology has come together at that time. Cell phones, you brought up the brick phones and that.
Yeah.
You know, there's more power in your cell phone by a factor of probably 1,000 than it was in the entire capsule that went to space for the first time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, what can we do with all that technology and power? But it takes people. It takes imagination and people. The company I'm with has got a very unique, we've got a terrific IP and a very unique
product. What's an IP?
Way to go. Catch me on one like that. Basically, it's your technologies and your patents.
Okay.
There's a term for it. And I'll think of it as we're talking.
Like proprietary technology?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Sorry, I just wanted to understand.
No, that's
better.
Good. Yeah, no, IP is a lot of times used in the technical verbiage. But we have a light source that works on a very thin film basis that'll work with displays, okay? I just had a conversation with my boss, and I opened up the entire Asian market in 2019 to 12 different manufacturers of displays that will be taking our product and putting it as a component that'll be in all their products. Okay, 2020 has just submarined that process, but it's going to start back up in 2021.
Yeah, it's going to be big for you.
What my boss said is great. We the company need you to do that again. Here's where the board of directors and here's where the investors of our company, this is where they see the next gold mine.
Okay.
So you got to take the knowledge you have of our technology. You got to find the knowledge of this gold mine, find the companies, and whether we build for them, whether we sell them technology, whether we sell them rights to our technology, whether we joint venture with them and use their name because their name is going to be IBM, okay, and they are bigger than us, but it's write the contracts.
Yeah.
So that's my 2021 has kind of been laid out to all new product development.
That's great, man.
Yeah.
I'm really happy that you're still involved in like the very cusp of high technology, even where you're at today, to where you're just trying to provide for your family, but you're also almost. I could say you're doing a service to humanity at this point.
It will be. That's what we want to do.
Yeah,
it will be.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. This was really eye-opening. Thank you.
Well,
thank you for agreeing to do this with me.
I appreciate you asking, and thank you very much for taking the time. I don't think about this every day.
Yeah.
And when you ask the questions, it makes me sit back. Ooh, great question. Great questions. This is interesting stuff. Let's talk.
I got you.
I mean, we could do this for a long time. We could talk all day.
Oh, absolutely. Time limit's 40 minutes, though.
Hey, got to stay on time. Probably got another conference call, right?
Absolutely, man. Thank you again.
All right, you got it.
Have a good day, man.
Take care.